Thank you, Reverend. Thank you, Spirit, that I just uttered a little tefillah. What a topic. It's humble. The Gemara says that, excuse me for my cold. The Gemara says that tefillah is the Devarim HaOyim, the Beruma Shalodol. It's the types of things that the highest of the high. And people are mizalzel, treated with a cheapness. So this is not a new struggle, but certainly a worthwhile one. I want to start by just thanking Rabbi Brand for not only his personal friendship, which, Baruch Hashem, I feel very privileged that we've developed over. By the way, this is an introduction. Okay, this is not part of my 10 minutes.
Okay, fine.
I'm watching. Just rewind. But I really feel privileged to have developed a personal friendship with somebody of such a high caliber in so many ways. And his relationship with Eric Brown Hebrew Day School and the involvement in the chinuch of the children. So thank you for that, and thank you for your wisdom in approaching me to do this in the month of July when everything is just so peaceful. Who thinks what December is going to be like? So very smart move, Rabbi Brand. He's got that slick Baltimore street smarts, and pulled one over on Chicago and over here. But it truly is, and as you mentioned, the opportunity to come together with not only with Rabbi Linzer, who really are often in touch with each other on many subjects, mostly related to chinuch, but we have other interests in life, and it's a pleasure to come together with Rabbi Linzer on a topic such as this. And it's a perfect backdrop for the conversation on tefillah. As the Shulchan Aruch Rav says, when a person comes into davening in the morning, the first mitzvah that they should accept upon themselves before davening is the mitzvah of Ahavas Yisrael v'Ahavta Rechav Kamocha. That's the backdrop for tefillah. Now, why that's so is certainly a discussion in and of itself worthy, and I think that's not really the time for it, but clearly it is the backdrop. If we're going to have this relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then we have to have a powerful relationship with each other. So I think that is the excellent backdrop for this conversation of tefillah tonight. What we were asked to discuss was challenges towards successful tefillah. What are some of the challenges that, in our opinion, I'm certainly not an expert on tefillah. I look around the room and there are so many people in this room that could sit here and talk about tefillah. But I'm asked to speak here this evening. Challenges about tefillah and things that we might be able to use to combat those challenges and help us improve our approach to tefillah, our appreciation of tefillah, our knowledge of tefillah. So let's just take a couple. I'm going to take a few. Linzer, I think, is going to take a few. And we'll take it from there. I think one of the great challenges that I certainly feel, and I have heard it from others as well, is the idea that tefillah becomes very challenging to get yourself up for, because it's the same old, same old. It's three times a day, Shachos Nekamar, Shachos Nekamar. It's the same words. If I could be creative and come up with my own tefillahs, which is certainly, halachic, be able to come up with your own tefillahs, but in actuality, these are the tefillahs that we're working with. And this sense of repetitiveness and the sense of redundancy becomes an issue. And when we have that exceptional tefillah every once in a while, whether it's an Eli Yom Kippur or a special Hallel, we may be able to inspire ourselves, but for just another Shachris, in quotation marks, just another mincha, difficult. So, one way that I heard from my rabbi, and it's something that I try to think about often, is the idea that we have to appreciate the uniqueness of every single day. fact that today's chakras feels to me the same as yesterday's chakras and will, in my mind, be the same as tomorrow's chakras is just not true. The words might be the same, but it's not the same. The story that I heard from my Rebbe, who experienced this firsthand, there was a famous mekubal in Yerushalayim, his name was Reb Cheshen, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Reb Cheshen was a well-known mekubal. He had all unbelievable kochos. One of his kochos was the ability to read foreheads. He could tell anything. He could see everything that you've done by just looking at your forehead. His kids would walk around like this. This was well known. So my Rebbe once went to visit Reb Cheshen. And the way my Rebbe told me, he said he walked in and Reb Cheshen looked at him and he said, "Do you realize what took place this morning as your eyes fluttered open when you woke up on your bed today? As a matter of fact, it happened yesterday, it'll happen tomorrow. Do you understand what happened?" My Rebbe said, "No." He said, "I'll tell you exactly what happened this morning. As you were coming into consciousness and you were waking up, there was a malach that's there by your bed. And this malach whispered the following thing in your ear. The malach said, 'I am your malach for today. I was created at the beginning of time to be your malach for today. I have been waiting since the beginning of time to be your malach for today. And at the end of this day, I will cease to exist.' Don't blow it." I'm not sure if that's exactly the way Reb Cheshen said it. But that idea that my chakras that I'm going to daven this morning, today's mincha, Tuesday of this day, of this year, is never going to repeat itself. I will never have this mincha again. It is a special thing. That's an idea that obviously can be applied to many things, not just tefillah, but it's a tremendous tool in thinking about the uniqueness of every moment. That's one idea. The other idea to combat that feeling is to gain an appreciation of the most basic element of what tefillah is. And to really think about this, when the Gemara says the Hasidim HaRishonim would take time before davening to think about tefillah, it's not clear 100% what they spent time thinking about, but one thing is certain, that they spent time thinking about what they were about to do. What are we about to do when we stand and daven in front of the master of the world, king of all kings? It's the most unique opportunity that has been given to us. That is to speak to God. That opportunity is so special and so unique. And the more one focuses on that, the more one realizes this is unbelievable. But it's much deeper than that. First, they can say to themselves, "Well, what? I'm not really understanding all the words. I get the basic gist of some of this, but okay, there's an obvious answer to spend more time learning the words, definitely. But there's a Ramban in Parshas Bo. The Ramban says that the yisod, the fundamental principle behind coming together in a shul to daven to the Rabbi Nishalom, is a public declaration of an emunah that there's a God in this world and that God actually listens and pays attention to us. It's implicit in what you're doing. If you don't believe that, then you're a raving lunatic. You're standing in a room and you're talking to the walls. Who are you talking to? We don't necessarily take the time to think of it. Every time we get up to daven, that same chakras, that same gemara, we are fulfilling one of the most basic commandments and on a public level, a declaration to all, I believe in God. I believe in God. And I believe in Hashgacha Pratis. And I believe in the fact that I am nothing without HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I need Him for everything. That alone, even if you Our kavana sometimes feels so minimal. But if we realize what we're accomplishing and what we're doing, just in that basic thing, it's huge. It's absolutely huge. There's a quick story that I remember hearing from a chavrus of mine. He learned to yeshiva just about the idea of how we desperately need our Kadosh Baruch Hu for everything. And that's a kiyum of a recognition of our Kadosh Baruch Hu's hashkafa who brought this in this world. He was learning yeshiva in Brooklyn called Yama Talmud. In the middle of Second Seder, his marriage is loud, pounding, people learning. There was a local person that lived in the neighborhood that would sometimes come in. He was a little disheveled. He wasn't 100% there. And he walked his day. He walked into the Beis Medrash. And in the middle of, I think it was Second Seder, he walked up to the Bima. He just gave a pound on the Bima. The whole Beis Medrash got quiet. And everybody's looking, who just pounded on the Bima? And this person looked at them and he said, you're sitting here learning. You take for granted, when you said the bracha this morning of Ata Chayin V'Adam Das, you take for granted that your brain works. That when you got up this morning and you could find your shoes, even though you knew where you put them last night, and you found your clothes, and you knew how to get to this yeshiva, and you could actually have a conversation with your chavrusa that makes sense. He says, I suffer from a mental issue. I don't take that for granted. When I make the bracha Ata Chayin V'Adam Das, I think, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I am completely lost without you. And the bracha Ata Chayin just changed for me when I heard that story. So, just to recap my 10 minutes, I think that one of these greatest challenges when it comes to davening is a feeling of, what am I doing? It seems so repetitive. What am I really doing? What am I really accomplishing? Don't have such great kavanah. And it could be an opportunity to grow in that area is a realization of the uniqueness of every tefillah. It isn't same old, nothing in life is that way. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Every da'at is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And that opportunity includes the opportunity to publicly, if you're part of a shul and a minyan, and even if you're davening the yechidus, to declare, I believe in God. I believe in God. And I believe in His ability to listen to what I'm saying and the hashkafa pratis that He has on my life, and that I'm nothing without Him. I need Him. That alone, if a person could accomplish that, we could accomplish that, tremendous. Absolutely tremendous. And I wish all of us hatzlacha in this continuing avodah. As the Gemara says, tefillah is one of the things that always needs chizuk. We always need chizuk. We give each other chizuk. We're always davening for different things. Just the other day, I davened that Eric Crown should be held to a basketball team.
who answered?
20 points.
Who won?
We split.
There are nisim in the world. Justin, I thank you for listening.
Okay. Yishkach Harveli. Thank you. It's really a privilege to be part of this evening and to be discussing such an important topic with such good friends. And really, I see also very wonderful people out in the audience, a mix of parents and educators, administrators. And it's something, this is one of these things that we're all in this together. In the interest of time, just to dive in, as a principal, as Rabbi Brandt said, it's an interesting day that, you know, as you go through the day, a lot of different things happen. But one of the most beautiful aspects, and really what I think one of the greatest privileges of being a principal, and I'm sure it's the same in Erie Crown and other schools as well, is walking through the halls of Hillel Torah in the morning and hearing all the different children, from the youngest all the way through the minyan, the sounds of their davening, the songs of their davening, the chants, the chazan, the chazani, just, it's the most beautiful sound. As the halls are quiet and everyone is in their rooms davening, it's one of the most beautiful things. And I think when we see our children davening, special program over in shul. There's something very special about that moment, whether it's our children or if we see other children. There's something very special about children davening. And the Rav spoke about this as well. And Rav Soloveitchik says that the famous Medrash Rashi quotes about Sarah Imenu at the beginning of Parshas Chayesara. The Torah enumerates that she was 127 years old. Shana, Shana, Shana. Why does it repeat the word? And Rashi said, quotes the Medrash that she, there was some equivalence between the way she was when she was 7, the way she was beautiful, for example, when she was 20, the same way when she was 7, and the same way she was without chait at 20. She was without chait when she was 100. So the Rav took this and built on this Medrash, and he says when it comes to different ages and different stages of life, there are different mitzvos that we can connect with differently, or we're more suitable at excelling in at different stages. And the Rav spoke about when it comes to Torah, for example. So we look, the Chazal speak about the Zakein, is the scholar, is the Talmud Chacham. It calls it Zakein, Zeshek HaNechachma. But it's the older person, it's the elderly person who's the Zakein, who's the Torah scholar. Why? Because they had so many years of learning and maturity and understanding. So when we want a real insight in Torah, we look to that real Talmud Chacham, that Gadol, who's on the older side. He says, when it comes to tefillah, though, we have to look to a child. He says, a child is more suitable, is more in touch with tefillah than an elderly person. He speaks about Sarah Imenu, that at all stages of her life, she combined those two. So when she was young, she had the aspect of maturity and wisdom of an elderly person when it comes to Torah. And when she was old, she still had that childlike innocence that she had when she was younger, and it came to her tefillah. But what we see from this is that children really do have a unique ability when it comes to davening. Unfortunately, as we get older, I think naturally we get a little bit more cynical and a little more jaded. And then sometimes it's a little harder to connect in davening like when we were children. We don't have that simple emunah perhaps anymore in the same way, that innocence and that purity that children have. So, and we see that as teens, you know, as children get older and move into adolescence, we see that davening changes, and it does get harder in some ways. It's still very possible, but it needs to speak to them differently, and their relationship with davening changes. So, just in a few minutes to touch on some of those, by all means not an exhaustive kind of a talk, but as Rabbi Sandberg said, none of us have all the answers. And it's an age-old, you know, issue that, please God, will continue for many years as well. But just to touch on some of that, I think in our day and age, some of the current challenges and perhaps some ways to think about them. So when I think about tefillah, I like to think about the following model, that really we could think about two aspects of tefillah. There's the outward structures and rituals of tefillah, and then there's the inner emotional aspect of tefillah. And the Gemara already, you know, Chazal speak about these two aspects. The Gemara in Brachos Daf Chavav talks about what was the three tefillos a day modeled after. So Rabbi Sandberg spoke about like the monotony, perhaps, of the text of the tefillah. And the Gemara wants to know the idea that we daven three times a day, what's that modeled after? So famous Gemara, many people know. The Gemara says, were they modeled after the Avos or after the Karbonos? Meaning after the Avos, Avram daven Shacharis, Yitzchak daven Mincha, Yaakov daven Shacharis, Yaakov Tikein, Arvis. So do we model our tefillos after the Avos, or do we model our tefillos after the Karbonos? There was a Tamachal Shachar, Tamachal Ben Arbaim, and there were the remains of the Karbonos were brought at night. Which is it? Which is the model? And I think many Mefarshim explain that really it's not one or the other, but really they're both true, and they just speak about different aspects of tefillah. That the Karbono speaks really towards the ritual aspect of tefillah, the fact that it's a set time, and every aspect of the Avoda and the Mikdash was done in a very specific ritualistic way. You couldn't veer from it. And that's perhaps the fact that it's three times a day, the fact that it's a set text, the fact that there's these set structures to tefillah. And the Avos really is about the spontaneity of tefillah, because Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov didn't daven because they had to daven at a certain time. It was a spontaneous tefillah. It was a spontaneous reaching out to God, many cases supplication, prayer, a petition, but also thanksgiving and hodah tefillos we find with our Avos, Avim, Yitzchak, and Yaakov at different points in their lives, and it's a whole topic in and of itself, representing different types of tefillah. So these two aspects, the outer trappings of the tefillah, together with the inner experience and the spontaneity of connecting with Hashem, really are two aspects of tefillah, and as the Gemara says, many of Farshim say, they're both important. It's not, you can't really have one without the other. They're both aspects of our tefillah experience. The Gemara famously speaks about it, as Rabbi Sam alluded, that tefillah is the avodah shebelev, lavda b'chalavavchem, the avodah shebelev, and perhaps that phrase, avodah shebelev, encapsulates both. The avodah, meaning the reminding us of the avodah in the mikdash, that's the avodah, but it's the avodah shebelev, it also has to have an inner emotional experience. And I think there are challenges really in both of these areas. When I've been to conferences, national conferences with day schools, all types of day schools from all over the country, almost always there's a session about tefillah in day schools, and it's very, packed. It's always a packed room. Everyone wants to go to that one. Everyone's looking, what's the answer? What are they going to do? And then you get in the room, and everyone starts talking, and you find almost everyone sees the same problems and the same challenges. And all the educators and all the principals are wondering, what can we do about davening? How can we improve? This is something that we're all types of schools, all types of communities, East Coast, West Coast, Midwest, we're all dealing with similar types of challenges, and it's something that it's really important, like we're doing tonight, to really take some time, think about, and think if there's something that we can do. I think when it comes to the lay, when it comes to the heart, the issue of, as we said, when we get older, we get a little more cynical, but truthfully, unfortunately, our culture, our society that we live in, that we are a part of, whether we like it or not, is a society that suppresses emotions and feelings and looks down on that and encourages us to be cool, calm, collected, and it doesn't somehow allow for us to be more emotional and to show our emotions. And I think that puts us at a little disadvantage when we walk into shul, because we're not often in that heart mode during our day. We're more in like a mind mode. And that's a challenge that we have in our society, in the world today. Rav Amital, I remember very clearly a number of years ago, Rav Amital, Olav HaShalom from Har Tzion, at one of the Gush dinners, he would always get up when he would give a lot of Musar, all in Hebrew, whoever understood, and that was it, and fire and brimstone. And there was one year where he spoke about this idea, and he spoke about how there's no more chamimut, there's no more warmth, there's no more passion in the world. And that's a challenge we need to be aware of. When we're walking into shul, we need to kind of turn on the switch for our hearts that might not be warmed up, perhaps, throughout the rest of our day. And that's one challenge. I think another challenge is a little bit what Rabbi Samer touched on as well, is the idea of relevance. I think it's for, and I'm speaking about us and our children at the same time, because I think very often we don't feel this, and certainly I think for many of our children, don't immediately feel that tefillah is relevant to them. What does that have to do with me? What do these words have to do with me? Do I understand the words? Even if I do understand, it's the same words. Does it mean anything? And Rav Soloveitchik spoke about how one of the essence of tefillah is the idea of ani bepetach, is to be like the Gemara describes, to be like the pauper in the doorway with his hand open. And that's if you really step back, as you so eloquently said, and really think about what's going on here, it's so obvious, like we're nothing. And Rabban Shalom has everything. And we have no leg to stand on. And how can we even dare to daven? Right? However, in our society that we live in, our daily lives that we live in, it's very hard to get into that mindset. I mean, let's face it, we live in a very affluent society. I mean, yes, this our society at different levels, but overall compared to history of the world and history of Jews, imagine what it was like in Europe and other places. We live in a very, very affluent society, and it's not easy for us to get into the mindset of being so needy. Because frankly, throughout most of our day, we don't feel very needy. I think one time, and the one place that you find many of us, and I see this with kids all the time in school, could really connect with davening is when it comes to cholim. We shouldn't know from it. That's where all the kids, they write the names of the cholim on the board, and everyone gets very serious, everyone gets very quiet. Unfortunately, because that's one place where we realize we fall short. We can't do anything about it. We need to daven, because that's not in our control. That's an area where we do have a need. We are like ani bepetach when it comes to someone l'aleinu who's has an illness. And you see that with adults, you see that with children, and we can mobilize, and we could sort of focus our tefillah when it comes to that. But that's really one example. Aside from cholim, and obviously people have needs and people connect, but generally for children especially, it's hard to connect that way. And the third aspect of the structure and the avod aspect, and the ritual of davening, is the issue of time, three times a day. Our lives are so busy, especially with technology. It's made our lives easier in many ways, but it's made us even more busy. The email, etc., we can't get away from it. You know, we're constantly distracted and busy. And making time for davening. So first of all, it's just making the actual few minutes to actually daven. But then, as you were saying, it's making that time to prepare for davening, to get into the mindset of davening, to try to actually go to shul, as opposed to maybe davening at home or in an office. You know, our life is so busy that it's hard to actually carve out just the actual time for davening. So these are some challenges that I think are unique to the times in which we live. So what can we do? I certainly don't have all the answers, and don't have really too many answers. Baal Shem Tov famously said that any Rebbe, any Rav who tells you to have a segula for how to have kavanah and davening, he's a charlatan. Don't listen to him. He's not a real Rebbe, because there is no such thing. So I certainly don't have any answers, and I think it's important to always keep in mind that, as we said, it's an avoda, because it requires work and requires constantly thinking of new aspects, new ways, new ideas. It's not something where you have one answer and it's going to work for the rest of your life. I think it's something also where we need multiple approaches. There's not only one solution or one approach that would work for us or for children, but we need different options. And it's also something, it's important to keep our expectations realistic. It's not an all or nothing proposition. Either you have good davening or you have bad davening. Or you have good kavanah or bad kavanah. Or their kids daven well or they don't daven well. It's incremental, and I think success is relative. So I think it's really important to keep that in mind with our own children and, of course, with ourselves as well. Some general directions. I think when we speak about parenting, in any arena of parenting, it's important to speak about, it's important to think in terms of role modeling, because anything that we want for our children, we have to do it ourselves. If we don't do it ourselves, they're not going to buy it. Children, you know, it's do as I say, not as I do. They see right through that nowadays more than ever. So anything we speak about how we want for our kids to daven, whether it's teachers in school, whether it's parents at home, we have to model it first. And I think as parents and educators, we also need to be honest with ourselves. We can't only talk about and get together and talk about how is davening going in schools without thinking about how's my davening as a parent or as an educator. In terms of modeling, I think we could model in different ways, and it's both fathers and mothers need to model davening. Whether it's davening at home, whether it's going to shul, whether it's you're on a trip and you daven in the airport, whether it's, you know, in the middle of a football game on a Sunday afternoon going to Mincha Maariv, it's making the time. And when we do those things, our children notice. And ultimately, that is what teaches them the most about davening. It's watching how we set aside that time for davening, how we say brachos. It's not just actual Shachris Mincha Maariv, but saying brachos. Women lighting candles, with the children perhaps, bringing them as part of that, saying Tehillim. Anything that we do that has an aspect of davening, that makes the most powerful statement for our children. So before you get to any tricks or educational approaches, I think that's the most powerful educational tool that I could think of. Specifically, just a few other ideas. Is it time? Okay. So I'm over the time. Okay. So I'll share just one more thought, and then
people start passing up the.
Yeah, definitely.
If you have questions, there should be little papers and little pencils going around you, so you'll be happy to pick them up and bring them forward when you have a second. Once you finish the last point.
So the when it comes to the. Some specific thoughts are when it comes to the avoda and the keva aspect of davening, it's important for us to make it part of our daily schedule. And I think some parents are afraid to force their kids to daven because they don't want to turn them off to davening. And I think we have to take the approach, like anything we want for our children, we're the adults, and we need to we need to parent. And like any mitzvah we would teach our kids about, we need to teach them about davening as well. I think it's okay, we have to have appropriate expectations. We can't expect our kids to all of a sudden love davening and be so spontaneous and passionate about their davening. It's like anything else when it's that we need to be mechanich them. It's teaching a routine. It's teaching them that you daven in the morning, you daven mincha, you daven maariv, like any other mitzvah. And over time, they develop their passion and their love and their excitement for it. It's not something we should be afraid of. One other point about that, and then we could move on to some questions if there are, is, and I hesitate to say this, I think Shabbos groups are something that need to be examined. As a parent, I love Shabbos groups. It's the best thing in the world. You drop your kids off, someone's watching them, you can actually daven. But at which point do they outgrow the groups? And many of the shuls, I'm sure here as well, are wonderful groups. At which point do they outgrow the groups? At which point do we say, you know what, it's time for them to sit in shul? You know, they're having a great time in groups, and they love groups so much, but at which point does that come to undermine the davening? And I do think that at some point we need to make that transition where they're actually sitting in shul. And yes, it's long. Shabbos morning is long, you know, and maybe there needs to be, you know, you're there for a certain amount of time, and then a longer amount of time. I'm really raising the question, but I think this is I think the Shabbos groups have done a lot to help adults get into shul. At the same time, I think we need to think about when we need to wean the children off.
Is this going to stretch over? Is that good?
Yeah.
Okay, a couple of questions here. One I'll just reflect on.
Sorry.
One of the questions was about tefillah being an avoda. What is the avoda of tefillah? So one of the ways of looking at this is something that Rabbi Samba mentioned before, in terms of the avoda of cultivating emunah. Emunah is not a binary thing, either you have emunah or you don't. As the Chazon Ish pointed out, in his small monograph, Emunah Bitachon, it's something that you cultivate. So we think about what is the avoda, what are we accomplishing when we go through the process of davening? So part of that is the process of cultivating that Emunah. But the second half of this question is, how can a person feel more connected to the davening? So maybe I'll start with Rabbi Sandberg, who want to take this question. What can a person do to help increase their own feeling? How can we feel more connection when it comes to davening?
Excellent question. It's definitely at the core of the issue. Part of it is approach. The more that a person puts into anything in life, whatever it is that you pick your topic, whatever it is that you're sacrificing, you're putting into, and you're focusing, and you're thinking about, the emotions will come. As it's Hashem, the emotions will come. So if a person is going to, as Rabbi Linzer said, if a person is going to make sure that he stops in the middle of his workday, he's going to stop in the middle of his workday, and he's going to build his schedule around making sure that he's at davening. That approach, the sacrifice, the seriousness with which a person takes, does lead a person to start to appreciate their davening because they're investing so much in it. One of the things that, clearly, and I'm sure the person who asked the question knows this as well, there's so many books that are out there right now on tefillah, so many really good Sfarim, Hebrew, English, that the opportunity is out there for a person to cultivate with themselves greater feelings about the words that they're saying. But to stop and think, focus on the center of what you're doing, think about your needs, think really about the things that are going on, whether it's in your personal life, in your community life, in Klal Yisrael. The emotion can come. The emotion, we have to allow ourselves to have that emotion to come. But I think part of the emotion, this is just a personal feeling. Emotion is contagious. Emotion is something that, you know, when you're davening in a minyan with a seedwort that is working on davening, and you're choosing a makom tefillah with people who are taking the tefillah seriously together with you, there's a contagious feeling to emotion when it comes to davening. There's a reason when we're in a place where other people are feeling emotion, that you feel that emotion as well. There's a spiritual reason, explanation for that, the bond that exists amongst Klal Yisrael, but it's just basic psychology 101. It's contagious. So I think there's a number of things that we can do on the just charting out how we develop our emotion. But it's not simple. And I think that is the avodish avodish, the very simple translation of the word. The lay is something that we have to work at. We have to work at it. And ironically, davening for siyanta d'shmaya for emotion. When we, just like in Birkas HaTorah, when we say baharim, no, we daven for a Torah to be sweet. That's an emotion. Daven that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should make our tefillahs, that we should feel it. There's no question.
Kutzker Rebbe says that the famous line that Gemara says that you need to daven like you have a person needs daven like they have a sword hanging over them. So as Kutzker was asked, and what if a person can't feel that? What if he then he should daven even more? It was his answer. So indeed, I think one way to think about this question of how to get to the more the kavana aspect of davening. I think for us today, a lot of it has to do with personalization. We live in a society where everything is personalized, right? I mean, a lot has been said about this. iPhone, right? Everything is I. Also, everything is like my playlist. Everything is customized, personalized to me. And I think for us, and certainly for children, the davening experience needs to be personalized as well. And I think what that means is we need to find ways for them personally to feel connected. It's not enough. You know, this is what works for someone else. It's what works for me. I was just at the speaking with Rabbi Matanky about the academy, and one of the very nice thing I learned is that they have different options of davening in the morning for children, so they could daven in different, same way for adults, right? Different types of minyanim, and the very fact that a child chooses, I want to be in this style of minyan, that style of minyan, that already helps the child personalize their davening. And I think that something like a choice could be a great thing. I think for a lot of us and for kids also, writing down something like what was mentioned before, like what were the idea of how do we realize and appreciate everything we have and realize our dependence on HaKadosh Baruch Hu through writing it down. So there's an idea perhaps of like a thankfulness, a gratitude journal I've heard mentioned, and you can write down one thing every day. Just no one has to look at it, just yourself. Or before davening on a post-it note, write down something that you appreciate, something you're thankful for. Maybe together with that, something you want to daven for. Taking that one moment to write that down before you're davening, and for children, same idea, to do that, can change the entire aspect of davening. Because all of a sudden, it's personal. I have something to daven for. I have something that me, in my own life, I'm appreciating. And that's sometimes that small thing is all you need to change the entire experience of davening. So perhaps that's a tactic that can be used in schools, but even with adults in our own lives.
Another question here is about specific kavanas in terms of the way that we relate to Hashem, things that Hashem did for us, things that Hashem did for the Jewish people. How do we identify, prioritizing, but thinking about different kinds of kavanas that a person could have during davening that can help them focus. I want to maybe take it first, then Pastor Sam.
I mean, there's a lot to be said about kavanah. It's certainly not my field. I'm not an expert. There's a lot of Kabbalistic kavanahs. I think the two areas to think about, as I said briefly, I'm not going to elaborate too much, is the idea of bakasha and the idea of hodah. You know, I think those are the two aspects that require cultivation and perhaps jotting it down beforehand. I also think it's worth noting the halacha very clearly says it's better to say less with kavana than a lot without kavana. Very clear, black and white Shulchan Aruch. And I think very often adults for sure, and certainly kids, because this is how we train them, because we want them to learn how to go through the sitter and kind of how to function in shul, we're so focused on what to say, and you know, sometimes we develop this habit of rushing, and we all do it, myself included, and I think we need to remind ourselves, I believe it's the Rama who says that it's okay to say less, say it slowly, say, I've heard from Herschel Schachter say this, encourage us as well. He's in the Wagyu-based marriage, which is a very slow minion. He says he doesn't have a chance to daven the whole thing. He says only some halalukas and you know. And so if that's what he's doing in that kind of minion, certainly we can just cut out parts of daven. Whatever we get to, we get to. Of course, we say the main parts, but say it more slowly, say it, you know, pay more attention to it, and perhaps that's something that could help.
Any specific Kabbalah? No, not about Kabbalah.
I would just say it's really. I think I'm saying the same thing. But I once heard a friend say that he had a friend of his who was struggling with a child who was had left the fold. He's struggling with that very much so, very painful situation. And this person told a friend that when he says the bracha, he has a whole new appreciation for the brachas of Shmona Esrei. When he says the bracha of Mechai Mason, he's davening that Kosh Baruch should do Tchias HaMason Man Islam. And when he has a bracha, when he made the bracha of Refa'inu, he was making a bracha that a Kosh Baruch should do Refus HaNefesh on his whole. His whole approach to the words, all of them. So, what resonated with me, and I'm not sure if this is answering the question, but I think that is really to think about what we're saying, not in a rote fashion, but understand that there's a depth to these words, that they apply to our lives, and they apply to our neighbor's lives, and they apply to the person who's sitting in shul next to you, in their life. And we're one. And Klal Yisrael needs your tefillah. Klal Yisrael needs your tefillah. And if a person really thinks about that, how can you not get emotional? How can you not have kavanah? Not always. But occasionally you will. When it strikes you that the person who's standing in front of you in shul is going through a tzara, and your tefillah makes a difference. And that's, I think, how I would approach kavanah.
Now we're done. Mamish. Okay. So, just to conclude, I think maybe there's one more word that I would add to this discussion. Amir Tzashem, we're going to continue more in February, but we'll have a lot of davening before then. And that is one word. I think it's a powerful word. We don't often use it in the context of davening, but I think it potentially could have a lot of impact based on what we've heard tonight from Rabbi Linzer and Rabbi Samber, and that is imagination. We talk about cultivating the heart, the avodah shebelev. Imagination is a very powerful tool, and I think it can accomplish many things, both in the realm of time and in the realm of space. For those of us who are privileged to see older people in our lives, especially people who came from Europe, especially people who really knew how to daven because they were the Ani BaPesach when they were running away from who knows what and who knows when. So helping ourselves by being able to use our imagination creatively in the davening, I think it could be very powerful. For some of us, it's a Rebbe. For some of us, it was a Mora. For some of us, it was an older person that we grew up with in a shtibel. Maybe we even saw them daven once. But using that imagination to conjure up those images when we daven, I know it's something that is meaningful to me, and I think it's something that we can use to both address the monotony that Rabbi Samber mentioned in terms of getting out of just the limited, I'm standing in front of a table, I'm standing in front of a sitter, but already the Chazal discussed the fact that when you're in front of a sitter, really you're imagining as if you're in the Beis HaMikdash. You're imagining as if you're in the Kotel, and it's 5:45 in the morning, and you have those off-white, yellowish lights, and you're maybe davening in the arch because it's raining outside. So when you're using your imagination, you can transform where you are to somewhere else, but also not just somewhere else in place, somewhere else in time, as someone that we may have known or we may have read about in some story somewhere that we can bring into our own davening that can transform our davening, and it could be something special. It could be as mundane as, I can tell you my own personal life, a particular Rebbe who I used to have the privilege of watching him on Wednesday night, just daven Maariv. I could see it right now, what that meant to watch this tzaddik, this chassid, this great Talmud Chacham, just daven Maariv. And so I think using imagination can also help in terms of pursuing some of the goals that we articulated tonight. So on behalf of the Kollel, on behalf of the ATT, Ari Crown, Hillel Torah, and just our whole community, we thank you for coming this evening. We hope you enjoyed. We hope you gained. I certainly, as I told Rabbi Samba this afternoon, I said, I'm looking forward just to coming to learn for myself. So I certainly learned a lot, and we look forward, Amir Tzashem, to a lot more learning and a lot more Torah growth together. Thank you very much, and good evening. Yashar Koach. Tshuva, does anybody want to daven Maariv right now?
Yes.
Okay, now's a very good time. The Shechter used to tell us.
I don't want to...
It's freezing cold. There's a draft from back here.
Well, I was sweating.
I thought this was going to be the Republican debate.
This is much better.
Thanks for being here. Okay, thanks for coming.
Fantastic.
He had a very nice
commission in July.
That's... How are you? Very good. Excellent.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for bringing your